You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Hi, folks. Welcome to the show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. A number of you, no doubt, are listening to this show for the very, very first time. And if you are, welcome aboard. I'm delighted that you're here. Be sure you get over to our website, kevinsmithshow.com, and check out all the goodies there. One of the goodies there is the K-Files e-zine, and it's our free weekly newsletter. It takes a few seconds for you to subscribe to it, and then you're in the loop, not out of the loop, and that's always preferable. It's a good place to be. And you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. Now, yesterday on the show, I talked about strange anomalies in the way the news media handles things that they have determined are edge information. That being, of course, anything having to do with the reality of UFOs, having to do with the reality of conditions on Mars, and the anomalous features on Mars and on the moon and so forth. The major media just doesn't pick up on it. Couple of things I failed to mention, and they're important. One of them, a really glaring example, is the way that all of a sudden the things that Edgar Mitchell, sixth man to stand on the moon, the things that he's been saying for the last 10 years, all of a sudden they picked up on, and they were treating it as if, wow, you know, this guy has finally come out with this information about UFOs and extraterrestrial life, when in fact he hasn't finally come out. He's been out. He's been talking about it for the last 10 years. Another really glaring example is the way the media has handled this Large Hadron Collider. Now, they have laughed at and chuckled at and ridiculed the idea that some scientists have that perhaps this thing could create a small black hole that could then grow and eventually be destructive to the Earth. They have chuckled at this and made fun of it. And then when the Large Hadron Collider was switched on, they reported, you see, no black hole, it didn't happen. Well, now this is just completely bogus reporting, because they did just switch it on. That's all they did. And they did not do the experiment that a lot of these scientists are concerned about. The experiment in question was not done, and yet the news media said, well, you see, there was no black hole. Yeah, that's true. There was no black hole because there was no opportunity for there to be one. So it's and I'm certainly not saying that I think there will be a black hole. I report that there's a group of scientists that say they fear it could happen. And, you know, I asked Dr. Michio Kaku about that. And he said, yeah, you know, theoretically, maybe, but it just doesn't have enough energy to sustain such an event. All right, now my guest this evening is Jerry E. Smith, and he's been with us before. I'm delighted that he is back with us again tonight. I've got some pretty tough questions that you posed when we did our show on weather warfare, and we'll get into some other stuff as well. We'll be back right after this. All right, we are back. It's the Kevin Smith Show. I am the Kevin Smith, your host, and my guest this evening is Jerry E. Smith. Same last name, but as far as I know, no relation. Jerry is a lot of things. He has been a busy man in his life. He's a researcher, a writer, author, editor, marketing executive. Also has been an activist, and you have seen him on television, you have heard him on radio shows, and if you've been listening to this show for any length of time, you've heard him right here. Jerry, welcome back to the show.
Well, hi, Kevin. Good to be with you again.
It has been a little while, and if I'm correct, may not be, I was incorrect once, I believe. But I think last time you were here, we talked about your book on weather wars.
That sounds about right. The book is Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature. It's been out not quite 2 years now. It hit the stands. The official publication date is December 30th, 2006.
Well, since that time, I have gotten a barrage of email, and I mean that. It's been steady. It's been coming in on a steady basis. People trying to convince me that there is weather warfare. And it's not a matter of trying to convince me that there is weather warfare. It's a matter of getting good, solid evidence of same, and your book provides your book provides the best documentation for it that has come along. Now, a lot of the stuff that people send me in emails, and by the way, don't get offended by my statement about getting a barrage of email, folks. I want you to send me email. But a lot of the stuff that I've been getting, Jerry, is sort of anecdotal and well, sort of running, screaming into the night, the sky is falling. So I wanted to get you back on, and you need to know that I did a show about weather warfare I believe it was last week, and no guest, I just used some documentation, and one of the things that I said was there's nothing to believe. It's already a documented fact that it's happening, and I used as a basis for that the statement of William Cohen, who was at the time the United States Secretary of Defense, where he said, talking about terrorist groups, that there are these groups are engaging. And those are the words he used, are engaging.
He says, others are engaging even in an eco type of terrorism,
yeah,
whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. It's real, and that's the reason why we have to intensify our efforts.
Well, I wanted to get you back on and get you to talk about this with us a little bit, and we can get into some other things as well. But because of the, I would say, intense documentation that's in your book, I think is probably the best volume on this subject that I've seen, and I've seen several, I've got several, but yours is so well documented. Jerry,
Thank you, Kevin. I very much appreciate that. The book is 400 pages of what I can prove on this subject, and I spent 7 years of research and 2.5 years writing, and really, truly, genuinely focused my attention on getting the facts, getting what can be proven, getting what can be documented in the mainstream press, getting the government's own smoking gun out in the open.
Well, and that's the point. In your book, you cite various government publications. You quote from them, but you also cite them in the footnotes so that we know where that came from. And it's pretty amazing stuff. But let me ask you this. Taking William Cohen's statement that they are engaging, that there are, and again, he's talking about terrorist groups, but he said others, and in the context of where he was speaking at a counter-terrorism conference sponsored by Senator Sam Nunn. And he says there are others that are engaging in eco-type warfare. Okay, now, when he says they are engaging, I think that's pretty definitive. I think he's saying it's
they
on.
Might be, could be, in the future. He says, right now, this is an ongoing event.
Now, this was in what year? 1997.
1997.
And so even in 1997, he's saying that this technology is being used against us.
Off the shelf.
All right.
This is the thing, is that this is an off-the-shelf technology. It was up and running, and this is stuff that governments developed, and he's saying others, and he leaves it very vague as to who these others are. And again, these comments are not as well drafted as they could be, because this was part of the Q&A session after his keynote address at this conference. So this is off the cuff, it's a run-on paragraph, and it leaves out a lot of stuff. But clearly he was thinking of something, and left it rather vague. And I tried the next 400 pages to fill in the blank.
Okay, now I'm going to use this definition when I talk about terrorists. It may be a government. It may not be a government. But anytime you target civilians, you're a terrorist. You're not a freedom fighter. You're not a revolutionary. You are a terrorist because you're targeting civilians. Now, we have seen, Jerry, even since you've been on the show, we have seen hurricanes that behaved rather oddly, a whole lot of hurricanes, and some that behaved oddly, gained strength when they should have been weakening, changed directions in ways they would not normally do, and hit dead center of major cities that have major economic impact upon this country. Of course, one of those would be Katrina. That is America's busiest port. Also, there is oil refinery. There are oil refinery facilities there. There are also chemical refineries and manufacturing plants there. And they are producing chemicals that are vital to life in these United States of America. Now we've seen Ike hit Galveston. And Galveston is, of course, a major player in the in this whole scheme of things about refining oil. Now, I'm not saying specifically that Katrina was manipulated and aimed at New Orleans. And I'm not saying that Ike was manipulated and aimed at Galveston. But I am asking you, what do you think about that?
Well, I think there are a lot of players in this game. And the problem here is getting any sort of hard evidence. The closest with this subject that we can get hard evidence, as I demonstrated in the book, Scientists have been working on massaging, manipulating, controlling hurricanes since the middle of the last century. And indeed, in 2004, I think it was, that was the cover story on Scientific American with a group of scientists who I quote at length in the book, who said they had figured out how to steer hurricanes. They had, at least in computer models. In the test tube, they can do it. As to whether they can do it in the real world or not is something else again. And then there is, are the Russians. There's Elate Technologies, which was a bureaucracy of the Soviet apparatchik that, when the Soviet Union collapsed, they spun themselves off as a for-profit company that that for the last decade have claimed to have the ability to create and control hurricanes on demand. The beyond that paperwork, we have satellite imagery and the CNN minute-by-minute reporting of what these things are doing. And when you look at the photographic evidence, when you look at the hurricane tracks, when you look at what has happened, and compare that to the historical what has happened, there are some extreme anomalies. Now, anomalies are not necessarily proof of anything, but the anomalies, this has never happened before, make you wonder, well, if it's never happened before, is it real? Is it natural? Or is it man-made? And the more we get stack-ups of this has never happened before, and the odds against it are absolutely astronomical, and it keeps happening, you begin to think, well, you know, we may be looking at something that is man-made. Now, one of the curiouses in this year's hurricane season is that four consecutive hurricanes smashed into Cuba. Cuba has never before, in the 100 and some years they've been recording, actually the 200 and some years they've been recording hurricanes down there, 400 and some years of recording hurricanes down there, there have never been four consecutive hurricanes whack Cuba. There's a number of folks on the internet right now saying that Cuba was bombed, that that this hurricane season was aimed at Cuba. Just like, you know, 2005, they were saying the hurricanes were aimed at the U.S.
All right, so who's doing this?
Yeah, and again, as I point out repeatedly in the book, Mother Nature gives great credible deniability. Until you actually get a scientist who comes forward and says, yeah, I did it, or a government, a military, you know, until you get a full bird colonel who says, yeah, I was the guy who pushed the button, you only have speculation. And this is one of the great problems we have here, is that there is substantial evidence that for several decades now, there have been tit for tat environmental disasters engaged in by parties and against each other, and we civilians are just the collateral damage.
Okay, now let me see how I want to ask a question. I want to phrase it properly here. If we have the technology to create weather, I mean, actually to turn on a hurricane, if we've got that technology, we obviously have the technology to detect when someone else turns theirs on.
That's possible. It depends on what technology they're using for it. Cohen was talking about the use of electromagnetic waves, that is radio. And radio is detectable. And so I would go along with you that if somebody is playing with detectable radio waves, we probably have detected it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we understand what it is we're detecting. We don't necessarily know what it is we're looking at when we're looking at it. And there may be, there probably are other technologies. Elite Technologies has never revealed their what I call their big win technology. We know that in 1997-98, there were massive forest fires burning out of control in Southeast Asia, particularly Indonesia and Malaysia. And Elite Technologies went to them and said, hey, we can create, in that part of the world they're called cyclones, we can create cyclones on demand and blow out your forest fires. And Malaysia went for it. They ponied up a never-disclosed amount of money. The Russians whooped up their big wind and indeed did create a cyclone, which we would call a hurricane, and blew out the forest fires. They also flattened hundreds of villages and left thousands of people homeless. Again, collateral damage. That big wind technology may have been used in other settings. Saddam Hussein was very tight with the Russians. When we went into Gulf War One, well, it lasted 56 hours. When we went into Gulf War Two, the Allies firmly expected to be in Baghdad by Wednesday. And what happened? The moment we launched, a big wind came up. It was the strongest winds in 100 years, the worst sandstorms ever seen. It nailed the Allied advance down for 3 weeks. And I think it's very possible, though of course I can't prove it, that Saddam Hussein went to his old friends, the Russians, and said, look, can you guys buy me some running time? And they came back with, how much cash do you have? We may be seeing this in the last few hurricane seasons. And it may be the Russians playing with the hurricanes, and the Russians may be working for somebody else. I think that these guys are a for-profit corporation, and they could be working for any highest bidder who wants to blow away New Orleans or Havana, as the case may be.
Well, yeah, and see, I find it interesting that Cuba has been hit like this, because if we suspect the Russians, I find it difficult to think that the Russians would hit Cuba. That's their big buddy over here in this side of the world.
Exactly. Of course, if you're talking about mercenaries, you know, mercs work for the highest dollar, and one of the stories about the 2004 Boxing Day Asian tsunami is that it was induced by electromagnetic waves and it was done by the Japanese mafia. I can never remember how to pronounce it. The Yakuza or the Yakuza.
Uh-huh.
The story goes is that the target were Malaysian crime lords who were, the competition, and they owned all the beach resorts in Malaysia that got wiped out by the tsunami, and that it was the ultimate drug deal gone bad. That if that's the case, and if Elite Technologies really does have this, who's to say that the Yakuza weren't targeting the drug lords in New Orleans.
Jerry, we have to take a break. Folks, we'll be back right after this. Don't go away. All right, we are back, and we are talking this evening with Jerry Smith, Jerry E. Smith. The book that he wrote that we are talking about, or that is the basis of our conversation, is available online, and if you look at my website, you'll see the cover of his book right under the little article about him, and if you click it, it'll take you right to the page. But it's also available in bookstores everywhere, isn't it, Jerry?
Pretty much. This turns out to be a book that turned out to be a little too hot for Barnes & Noble, and most Barnes & Nobles don't carry it. In fact, I've had a number of people complain to me that the guys at Barnes & Noble told them that it didn't exist, that it was out of print, that it was gone in history. So You may not be able to get it in your local bookstore, I'm afraid, but you can definitely get it online, and you can get it at Amazon.com for ridiculous discounts.
Here's what I don't understand about that now. The information that's in your book is not secret. The information that's in your book, any of us could have found it. It's out there in the public. If we had spent the years to dig, we could have found it in non-classified documents. Am I correct?
Oh, absolutely. I know nothing secret. I want to know nothing secret. Everything here is in the open military and scientific literature. Of course, most people don't know that there even is an open scientific and military literature, much less how to find it.
Well, and the point then for Barnes & Noble would be, why is this too hot? If our military is making these publications, and if the scientific community is making these publications, and they're out there available, the public can read them, then why is that too hot? I mean, that seems to me to be a bit, it's a ridiculous argument for them to make, but it would be, I think, a great service if they provided the book. But by not providing the book, it really indicates an agenda. Because it's not too hot.
That's my take on it. Is that it's a form of censorship?
There's a lot of that, Jerry. And
you know, before we went to the break, we were talking about something, and about how if you have this technology and it's available to the highest bidder, then anybody with any agenda can use this technology to further their agenda. And this was actually recognized and commented on over 100 years ago. In the 1890s is when scientific application of technology, of the developing of rain-making technology first occurred. And 15 years ago, the editor of the Hutchinson News in Hutchinson, Kansas, wrote, he thought that there would be serious objections to this technology, and he said, "There could never be a political barbecue without all the rain machines of the opposition being set in motion." And he said, "Infidels would spoil all the camp meetings, and the church people would ruin the horse races."
Well, it's on a grander scale than that, but that's about what's going on, it would appear.
Exactly. I mean, if the... you may recall that about 10 years ago, Nexus Magazine of Australia ran a series of articles called Bright Skies, in which the articles revealed that the death cult in Japan, those guys who had used the sarin gas in the subway, had been experimenting with Tesla-like technology to develop a death ray, and that there had been fireballs out in the air above the Australian outback, and that these people seem to have been investing a lot of time and money in trying to develop this technology. Luckily, they didn't get very far with it, and they didn't get to use it on civilian populations. But if this sort of thing is, we are standing at the threshold to a time when pocket nukes are mild in comparison to what these would be remodelers of the world will be pulling out on us.
Jerry, do you think that there are states involved, and I'm talking about governments involved in aiming hurricanes at the United States? And if so, who do you think they are and why?
I have no data on that. You know, there's endless speculation on the subject, but I have nothing hard. And I don't mind speculating, but I always keep it as, okay, this is a speculation. I have no proof. And that's where we're at on whether America is the target or not. And we might just be the downwind of the target. It might have been all along Cuba or Antigua was the actual target, And it just happened that once the target got hit, the weapon, i.e. the hurricane, continues to mosey on and bumbles into us eventually.
Well, even if we're not the target, if we're getting the downwind result of it, and it's rather devastating, I would think we need to put a stop to it.
Tell that to the North Koreans, because they got the same damn problem. If you paid attention to the Olympics this year, you probably noticed that the Chinese government were proud of the fact that they made perfect weather for the Olympics. Not just that, but that for a year before the Olympics, they were touting that they had 37,000 full-time weather managers working on the problem and promised perfect weather for the Olympics and pulled it off. Now, the Chinese have been massaging the weather over China for more than a decade. And downwind of China is North Korea, who has been in a drought for more than a decade because the Chinese have been stealing their rain for a decade. So there's a good downstream effect for you.
All right, so then if China causes it to rain in China, then that uses up the rain that would have fallen in South Korea. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. I mean, that's been, again, since the days of the rainmakers in Kansas in the 1890s, that has been in the American courts. If I make it rain where I am and you live downwind of me and it doesn't rain where you are, have I stolen your rain? And it's been locked up in the courts for 130 years because they can't quantify it. They can't say, okay, I stole 3/10 of an acre foot of rainwater from you. Therefore, I owe you $17,297.18 worth of damages for having stolen that rain from you. Because they have not yet been able to quantify exactly what's been going on, the courts have been throwing out the cases rather than adjudicating them. But this has been a problem that's been recognized for 115 years now, 130 years now.
So then it should be possible if, in this case, we'll say the U.S. government, if the U.S. government decides, you know, we want to turn the desert of Arizona into the Garden of Eden, it should be possible for them to turn the rain on and make it happen. Is that right?
Well, there are, of course, conditions that have to be met. I mean, there has to be moisture there in order for the rain to happen. The problem is, if I may sort of answer your question with a side issue, is that science in its arrogance doesn't realize its failings. And example you gave of making the desert bloom happened in my home state of Nevada. In the period immediately after World War I, it was argued that the Truckee River, which runs from Lake Tahoe to Pyramid Lake through Reno Sparks, was just uselessly pouring into this giant desert lake of Pyramid Lake, and that this water could be more better used by diverting it to the soon to be farming community of Fallon. And they built a dam and diverted the water, and Fallon became the oasis of Nevada and is home to the world's best cantaloupe. And the guys who built the dam didn't know about trout spawning, and the Lahontan cutthroat trout, that was the largest trout in the world, lived in Pyramid Lake and needed to spawn in Lake Tahoe upstream of it. And when they built the dam, they didn't include any way for the fish to get around the dam, and within 20 years, the Lahontan cutthroat trout was extinct. We have these problems with science coming up with solutions that just make bigger and badder problems. And this is one of the things that I've cover in both my books, HAARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy, and Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature, is that we don't know what the downstream problems are going to be. And this lovely solution today turns out to just create a bigger and badder problem down the road, and that we need to go slow. I'm not a Luddite. I'm not, a technophobe. I don't say we can't develop this technology. I say we need to develop it slower and introduce it incrementally to see what the hell it's going to do.
All right. Now, you've mentioned HAARP, and, of course, we're I think most of us are familiar with what HAARP is. If you're not familiar with HAARP, ladies and gentlemen, it's H-A-A-R-P, and you can look it up on the Internet. But basically, it is one of the world's most powerful transmitters. I've heard that, but I've heard that there's one in Norway more powerful.
No, that's another type of a device. All these things are called ionospheric heaters, and the Norwegian one in Tromsø, Norway, is much smaller than HAARP. Today, HAARP at 3.6 million watts of radio frequency energy is the world's largest radio transmitter. Period.
Okay, and so one of the unique things about HAARP is, instead of having the radio signal just bounce all over the world, they can actually focus it. They can focus it into a specific area of the ionosphere. Now, does HAARP play a role in weather modification, or is that just one of the rumors about it?
You know, I wish I knew for sure the answer to that. I am convinced it plays a role, but I can't prove it.
Jerry, we have to go to break, and we'll pick up there with HAARP when we come back. Folks, don't go away. We will be back. More with Jerry E. Smith. We're talking about weather warfare and the documented evidence for it. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Jerry E. Smith. Jerry, when we went away for break, we were just beginning to get into this discussion about HAARP. And I had asked if you think that it is used for weather modification, and we were into that discussion. So let me let you continue with that.
Okay. As I said, I think it is, but I can't prove it. Let me step back a bit before I give you my evidences by saying what a HAARP is officially, and that is, it's a research station. And everything you read about it will tell you HAARP is a research station. But they're a bit vague as to what HAARP is researching. They want you to think that HAARP is about how the atmosphere works, about understanding the dynamics and systems within the atmosphere. No. HAARP is based on, we have done that research for a century. We know the atmospheric dynamics. We know the systems. The question now is, what can we do with that knowledge? How can we use the atmosphere to accomplish our goals? Now, who's our? The Department of Defense. Yeah, it's civilian science, and the work is being done by students and professors at the University of Alaska and half a dozen other universities, including Maryland and Columbia and so forth. But the project is on DOD, Department of Defense land. It's managed by a joint committee, the Air Force and Navy. Its purposes are DOD purposes. And what are the purposes of the Department of Defense? To win wars. So what would the DOD want to do with something? They would want to make it so that it improves the efficiency or power of a weapon. HAARP is about weaponizing the atmosphere. HAARP is about using the natural systems in order to accomplish DOD purposes. It's about drafting Mother Nature. Now, that is in the paperwork. That is there in plain, bold type. But you have to read the type carefully, because they misdirect you into thinking, well, it's just this or it's just that, by not telling you exactly what it is. Because they know that if they told you exactly what it was, you wouldn't like it. Now, there are several areas where HAARP may have an effect on the weather, and these are extremely technical, and much of this is locked up in very technical papers that are available, but are, unless you are a scientist working in that zone, you have no clue what the heck they're talking about. I mean, you can read the first paragraph, and it'll give you a rough idea, and from there on, it's just, wow, I had no idea. So what we do know, well, as an example, one of the major science magazines, and I wish I could remember which one offhand, I think it was Nature, noted in an article in 2003 that in 2002 there had been a dogleg in the jet stream immediately above the HAARP site, which resulted in a swarm of out-of-season tornadoes in Florida. It's pretty well established that the weather over North America is very largely driven and directed by the jet stream. If you can drive and direct the jet stream, you can change and control the weather over North America. Now, the Chinese have been fiddling with that over Asia for some time and have gotten pretty good at it. As to whether HAARP is actually doing that or not, it's nowhere in the available scientific and military documents. I mean, if they're doing it, they're not talking about it. But there are some circumstantial evidences. And, you know, they have hung men for circumstantial evidence. So this is quite courtroom admissible, even though it doesn't play well in the 6 o'clock news. The biggest piece of circumstantial evidence that I'm aware of that HAARP may indeed be involved in the hurricanes is that HAARP has been under construction since the early 1990s, and there is some peculiarities about its final construction date. The last contract to build it was awarded to BAE Systems North America, the former British Aerospace. And they held their contract required HAARP to be completed by the end of season 2007. And in June of 2007, they held a big ribbon-cutting ceremony at the HAARP site to announce that it was completed. However, the project management had been given to DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, in 2002. It was DARPA who got the Navy to cut the check for BAE Systems, who then farmed out, subcontracted the work under the direction of DARPA. DARPA announced via its website that HAARP was completed in March of 2006, more than a year before the ribbon-cutting ceremony. And those independent researchers who listen for the HAARP signal, because HAARP is an audible radio signal, noted that throughout 2005, once BAE Systems got the contract, the HAARP was up and running for a few hours each night. And the conclusion was that during the day, they were putting in the new transmitters and the new antennas and wiring them up, and then at night they would run them for an hour or two to see if the wiring worked, if the day's workmanship was progressing properly. And this stopped just before Thanksgiving 2005. So the likelihood is that HAARP was actually brought up to full power and completed just before Thanksgiving 2005. It was announced officially by DARPA in 2006, and then big ribbon-cutting ceremony in 2007. Now, what's significant about this is that apparently the thing was rushed into completion a good year and a half, almost 2 years, ahead of the scheduled completion date.
Now, why would that be?
2005 that might cause that. The 2005 hurricane season was the worst ever. The greatest number of named storms, the greatest number of high category 4, 5 storms to make landfall, Katrina, that was the great watershed disaster year for hurricanes. Now, the next year was an election year. The next year, HAARP is rushed into completion. HAARP is up to full power. And what happens hurricane-wise? Nothing. Nothing. In 2005, the weather pundits were all saying the 2006 season was going to be even worse than the 2005. 2006 comes along, nothing. 2007 comes along, nothing. And so far with 2008, all the hurricanes that have made landfall have made landfall west of the Mississippi. Now, this is important in that 2006, 2007, 2008, there has been an anomalous high-pressure dome parked over the southeastern United States. The dome was huge in 2006 and prevented any hurricanes from making landfall. It was smaller slightly in 2007, and while no hurricanes made landfall, several tropical depressions that moved into Texas and flooded a substantial area of Texas. Conveniently, that area flooded was the exact same area that the government was trying to acquire the land for the NAFTA superhighway. Now, this year, again, we have Texas flooded. Again, for the first time in 3 years now, we have a couple of making landfall. The first one made landfall at the extreme southern tip of Texas. And I forget what the name of that one was. And then we had Ike and the one before Ike that went down the NAFTA corridor. I believe, and this is my personal opinion based on the coincidence of this inexplicable, never before happened high pressure dome and the convenience of this thing flooding an area where the government is trying to use eminent domain to acquire property, is that this whole thing has been orchestrated probably through HAARP because, again, HAARP was rushed into completion. And how often do you find a DOD project that turns up 2 years ahead of schedule and well under budget?
Well, that is rare. That is rare. That's more anomalous than these storms.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's my take on it. But, again, I don't have any paperwork. It'll probably be 25 or 30 years before the paperwork comes out or some brave soul says, yeah, I was the guy running the dials that day. Yeah, we did it.
Wow.
You see, and the problem is you might think, well, if we have this high-pressure dome that's acting as a hurricane shield, why aren't they taking credit? I mean, if there were no hurricanes in 2006, no hurricanes in 2007, isn't this a good thing? Well, what happened under that high-pressure dome? There were drought, heat deaths, wildfires, property loss.
Yeah.
If they admit to having saved Baton Rouge and Boca Raton from the hurricanes, they ought to admit to having fried Huntsville.
Yeah. Listen, we are seconds away from our top of the hour break. When we come back from that break, I have a flash message already that has come in. Let me tell all our folks that live outside the United States and outside of Canada that you can use our flash message link. It's right there under the little article about Jerry on our website, kevinsmithshow.com. And you can send me your questions or comments, and we'll get Jerry to comment on those. All right, we'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Jerry E. Smith. Jerry, we were talking about HARP, and we were talking about the possibility that it has been used to control the weather. I've got a flash message now out of Australia. Andrew would like to know, in Australia, if a country has the ability to aim a hurricane at another country, which also has the same technology, is it plausible that the country that the hurricane is aimed at can use this technology to either aim it back at the sender or send it elsewhere where it won't do much damage?
Well, I think there's good evidence for that exact scenario in Katrina. If you watch the track of Katrina, it did some very odd things. As it was about to come on shore, it abruptly made a right turn and went 90 miles down the beach before coming on shore. Hurricanes don't normally do that. In fact, there is no recorded instance of a hurricane doing an exact right turn and going down the beach. This indicates to me that somebody got a hold of it and pushed it off from New Orleans at the last possible moment.
It would also seem to indicate that whatever technology was used to do that, assuming that that's what happened, is not really capable of long-range work, or they could have made it miss the United States entirely.
Right. This is a technology where we have gotten bits and pieces of it leaked out to us. As I cover in the book, Dr. Hoffman and his team, who were on the cover of Scientific American, they concluded that very small changes in the sea surface temperature would result in radical changes of the vectors, of the travel directions of the hurricanes. Now, that may be what ELA technology is working on. Hoffman and his team thought it could be done from satellites using lasers to heat up the ocean surface. There are a couple of other techniques that have been postulated or tried. It's hard to know for sure which ones have actually been demonstrated out in the real world. We know with the last major cycle of experimentation the U.S. government was working on was Project Storm Fury. And Storm Fury was working on not on directing the hurricane, but on reducing its force, and had a very good success record. 50% of the hurricanes they played with, they got a reduction of 15 to 35% of total wind speed. But playing with the wind speed of the hurricane, turning it from a Category 3 down to a Category 1, is quite a bit different from being able to launch one at your neighbor. And again, ELA technology says that they can whoop one up and launch it anywhere at anybody at any time if you come up with enough cash. And ELA technologies is real. I mean, they're a multi-billion-dollar corporation at this point, engaged in a number of projects. One of the projects I document is one that takes place on the Mexico-Texas border, where the ELA technologies picked up a technique that the Department of Defense was playing with in the 1950s and abandoned, which was ground-based stations that ionized or deionized the air above the ground station. And what that did is by ionizing the air above the station, that turns anything in the air into a nucleating particle. The way rainmaking via cloud seeding works is you inject into a cloud a substance that is very water friendly, and the water in the cloud attaches itself to the substance and then grows more and more and more water attaches to it until it becomes too heavy to stay aloft as vapor and falls as a raindrop. And by the technique that Elay Technologies is using in northern Mexico, they have turned anything in the air, smoke, dust, anything, into a nucleating particle at a tiny fraction of the price of what we're doing using silver iodide, and they can do it at the flip of a switch. And when they went into northern Mexico 10 years ago, northern Mexico was in a severe drought. The reservoirs were less than 30% of capacity, many of them less than 10% of capacity. And today, the reservoirs are all at capacity. And the Texans have been screaming that the Mexicans are stealing their water from them. And this is indeed what's been going on, thanks to Elay Technologies. So these guys are major players, and they work for the highest bidder.
Could not that be considered an act of terrorism?
Indeed, it could be. I document in the book that there is an international treaty banning weather or the manipulation of environmental processes as a weapon. That a UN treaty was signed into law in 1978. It's the Convention on the Prohibition of Military or Any Other Hostile Use of Environmental Modification Techniques. But the treaty is nonsense. The treaty is a joke. Conditions to be a violation of it are much too high. The procedure for trying to get redress in the international community is just a joke. I spend about 80 pages addressing the failure of this treaty. But yeah, it's possible that the U.S. could file a grievance with Mexico, but in order for it to be a violation of this treaty, it has to be long-lasting or widespread or something else. I forget offhand. Long-lasting, widespread, or...
Well, this gets down to what is the definition. It depends on what the definition of is.
Exactly.
And it gets into legalese.
The threshold conditions are so high that what the Mexicans are doing is entirely within the bounds of what's okay under the treaty.
All right. Let me get to some flash messages here. We have one from the United Kingdom that says, this is from Mr. Crowley. And it says, you have the best such show on the radio as normal. So now that we have the compliments out of the way, I have an obvious question. If the USA has weather control capabilities on the scale suggested, and no doubt a few countries have limited ones, why do they not seem to use them to their advantage in war areas? And by that I mean, why small island in the middle of nowhere, Texas, etc., but not to destabilize countries like Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, where I understand now what he's saying, where this would give them an advantage prior to a war or help destabilize a country that the USA dislikes. So what he's saying is, why hit a small island like Cuba or somewhere on the U.S. coastline? Why don't we use it in Afghanistan?
Well, that's a really, really good question. And you have to go back to, again, we have to infer the answer from the available evidence. And the available evidence is, you know, what you get on CNN, et cetera. What I think is that the U.S. lags behind in this technology. I think the Russians and the Chinese are way out in front of us in this technology. Remember Cohen, Secretary Cohen, said others have this technology.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say we do. And I've always suspected that, you know, if others have it, we have it too. But it doesn't necessarily mean we're on par with them. You know, in the first years of the space race, the Russians were way ahead of us.
Yeah, for quite some time.
In a weather war race right now, in which others are well ahead of us.
All right, here is one from Norway, and it says, very interesting show tonight. Does your guest know if there is a connection between UFOs and HAARP?
You know, I have addressed this. In fact, I spoke at the International UFO Museum in Roswell, New Mexico, on this very subject. Again, it's more speculation than science, and you have to go back with what do we know about UFOs, which is pretty slim. One of the stories about the Roswell crash is that the object that crashed in Roswell crashed because it was not properly shielded from our radars, and our radars messed with its onboard electronics, and that's why it crashed. It's very possible that HAARP may indeed be part of some sort of planetary defense built on what we know about Roswell. It's a heck of a stretch, but it's not impossible.
A lot of the scientists involved in, for instance, the early days of NASA, apparently spoke of UFOs in a less, let me rephrase that. They spoke of UFOs and extraterrestrials in a more serious way than what we're accustomed to these days. For instance, Wernher von Braun is said to, and this is from someone who worked with him on a daily basis, said to have had a belief that UFOs were extraterrestrial and that extraterrestrial beings existed. Now, whether that's true or not, we can't ask him. He's not here now. But there were also people involved in the early days of NASA with strong connections to occult societies. And it just could be that some of that follows over into HAARP. Now, I don't mean that the scientists involved in HAARP were in the occult, and I don't mean that they necessarily believe in UFOs or ETs, but here's what I think it could be. It could be that there are people involved who know that Roswell was ET. There may be people involved who know that Wernher von Braun was correct, and it could be just a handful of folks that maybe are at the top of this thing that steered it that direction with the capabilities of possibly, as you said, possibly a planetary defense system.
Yeah, that's a, you know, that, as speculation goes, that's a pretty good piece of speculation.
it is that.
Yeah, you know, the problem is you if you dig up the bios of the people involved, none of the people I've been able to find bios on are in any way involved in anything that even vaguely smacks of what you're talking about.
Yeah, but let me tell you this. No one would have ever thought that of Wernher von Braun either. He was a scientist. He was a rocket man. And, I mean, none of that ever came up during his lifetime. It came up after his life.
He was a rocket man who wanted to go to Mars.
Yeah, he was.
If you remember, my favorite quote from Wernher von Braun is when he was told that the first V1 rocket hit London, he said the rocket worked perfectly except it landed on the wrong planet.
Yeah, he was very much interested in going to the other planets, and particularly Mars.
Exactly.
But the idea that that he thought that extraterrestrials were factual. That didn't come out until after his death. And
that was because it was something you couldn't talk about.
Yeah.
The mainstream media has made anybody who says UFOs and aliens are real a laughingstock. And Americans are the most go-along people on the planet. Americans line up to join consensuses. It galls me, and we have been like this literally since day one. De Tocqueville, who wrote about America in before the 1812 war, noticed that we were the most conformist country on the planet at that time. We're real big on sheepalizing ourselves, and so anybody who points out anything as a laughingstock, everybody jumps up and runs to the other side of the room as a matter of reflex.
Well, yeah, that very same thing could exist right now with some of those people at the top of HAARP that personally and privately may say, yeah, UFOs are real, ETs are real, but they just don't go public with it. And I'll tell you, I've talked with one of the scientists that worked on HAARP who is in precisely that category.
That I can believe. The DARPA project manager at HAARP, I think, is a good example of this sort of thing. I won't say that he's an ET believer, but his credentials were pretty amazing. When HAARP got in 2002. The Air Force and Navy team running HAARP realized that they couldn't get it together, that they were unable to complete the project, and cut a deal with DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, to complete it for them. And they gave project management to a guy named Dr. Sheldon Meth, M-E-T-H. If you look Sheldon Meth up on the Internet, you'll find some very interesting things about him. At the time that he got HAARP, he was a project manager on three other projects. Two were laser projects, and one was some sort of a munition. The laser projects were Air Laser and Laser Star, and the munition, I've read everything I can on it, and it makes no sense whatsoever to me. The magneto hydrodynamic something or another, it's you know, HAARP, High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, HAARP. This thing came out to mayhem. I always thought it was hilarious that the guy is running Laser Star, Air Laser, HAARP, and mayhem. It's like he's herding a couple of the horsemen of the apocalypse through his office. And he came from, and I always have to stop and write this down to get it right. CIAS, CIA, spell that backwards. SAIC. He came from a corporation called SAIC, which is CIA's spelled backwards, and for a reason, the SAIC was a major defense contractor to the intelligence community, with their primary clients being CIA and NSA. And Dr. Meth worked his way up through the ranks at SAIC, then went to DARPA, and now it is the head of technology at a private corporation that contracts to CIA, NSA, etc. So there are a lot of spooks in the HAARP woodshed.
Well, I think that would be a given, considering how cloudy the real purpose of HAARP is. And considering where it came from, I think it's a given that you would have a lot of spooks what did you say, in the woodshed?
Spies, not spooks, as in a racial epithet.
Right. I never even think of it that way.
But you and I don't, but there was a guy who ran an anti-CIA NSA website that he called Spook Central. And he had... groups from the NAACP, etc., harassing him about calling them spooks, and he's going, "What are you people talking about? What do you mean, you people?"
And, oh man, that's just ridiculous.
He had to change the name of his website because too many folks got it wrong.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous, and you know,
I thought so.
Well, and that gives me an opportunity to rant for a second. Look, freedom of speech, folks. That's what America's about. And if you're going to police what everyone says, if that's what you're going to do, please. There are countries still on this planet that are communist and are in that business. And, you know, please, if you want to police what everybody says, and you, if it doesn't meet your approval, then you want something done, get out of this country, please. You're killing it. Now I finish that rant. Here's kind of a quick question, and then I'll have to bid you farewell for tonight because we're going to open up the phone line, and as I explained to you, we have only one functioning right now, and we have ordered the replacements, but they have not arrived. So this final question, where can people get your books?
Well, I have a website, and I invite everyone listening to visit my website, which is jerryesmith.com. That's Jerry with a J, JerryEsmith.com. At JerryEsmith.com, you will find a great deal about my books. Each book has its own section on the website that includes an overview of the book, reviews of the book.
Jerry, the break is taking over. It's going to kick us off, man. Thanks for being with us.
Okay.
All right, I appreciate it. Absolutely astounding. Very informative. And the telephone lines will be open when we come back. And we are back. It is the Kevin Smith Show, and I am your host, Kevin Smith, and we're talking this evening about weather wars. I know we did. I did a show on this last week, but and I had tried to get in touch with Jerry to get him on to do the show with me last week, but I was not able to do that, and he was out of town. So. We scheduled him for tonight so that we could hear from truly an expert on this material. What do you think about what you've heard? Now, you've heard from Jerry. You heard from me that last week that, as far as I was concerned, this is an established fact because of a statement that was made by the U.S. Defense Secretary, who at the time was William Cohen. Now, Jerry quoted that statement again here tonight, but he's given us some additional information here tonight and also some speculation. Now, I get email from people who say they believe that a lot of this is being done. And look, I'm going to tell you right now that I have not bought this theory. But it is one that comes to me from several people in emails. And the theory is that a lot of this weather warfare is done from the International Space Station. Now, I don't think so. Also from shuttle missions. I don't think so. Now, I could be wrong. And, you know, I've already told you, and you know this, I believe that freedom of speech, freedom of thought are very, very precious and important. And if you think that that is what's going on, I would like for you to let me know and share with me why you think that is going on. If you think that's not happening, I would like for you to share with me why you think it's not happening. Now, the reason I think that it is not happening, that weather warfare is not being conducted from the International Space Station nor from any shuttle missions, The reason is because those are both highly monitored by all kinds of folks whom you would classify as amateur, okay? And I don't mean that in a bad sense, but I mean amateur astronomers, amateur radio operators, and so forth. They monitor those shuttle missions. They monitor the space station. I think they would detect something. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent. How are you?
Four. Broken rib.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Well.
This is a little off topic, but I've been reading a book on, electrogravitics and the research that's gone into it.
Yeah.
And if even half of what they say is possible, I hate to think what weather warfare could be doing right now.
You know, you've sent me some email relative to your work, and I found this. I'm kind of answering what you said in a roundabout way, but I found on YouTube a guy that built an engine that uses only magnets to generate the power to run the engine. And he's got two big flywheels, one on each side, and he just reaches up and grabs those and spins them, and that starts the engine. And then in that YouTube video, it shows, you know, he runs an electric drill. I think he runs a vacuum cleaner. He powers a light, all with this engine, and it just keeps running.
Magnetic flux.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
And when I, you know, I went look after your last email about that, I went looking for stuff at YouTube about it and found that one. And as a matter of fact, sometimes I show it on the on our TV feed. Yeah. So what you're saying is if electrogravitics is possible.
Half of what they say is they can do with electrogravitics and specifically high frequency in the 3.3 to 3 gigahertz microwave things.
Uh-huh.
They can blast a hole through a wall in less than a second and have to turn it off before it goes to the next wall. Now, if that's possible, and that's 40-year-old technology. What have they done with weather technology?
Yeah, but now that would be detectable, wouldn't it? I mean, there are instruments out there that could detect that machine was on, right?
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, if they've got that with a totally unrelated science that most people don't even know about, what is to say they haven't advanced in their weather manipulation technology so far that we can't detect it?
Yeah, but you know, I don't know how you could do that, because anytime you generate a beam of energy,
a signature, I know, but
yeah, there's got to be technology that can detect that.
Yeah,
I would think.
I do too, but it just kind of makes me wonder if they've advanced to the point that. To the point that we cannot tell what is and what is not natural weather.
Hmm. Could be. Could be. Brent, it's good to hear from you.
Yeah, okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen. The telephone number is 623-287-3814. 623-287-3814. The telephone line is open. For those of you who have just started listening and you don't know what's the deal, why did we have to let the guest go? We have a telephone system. We have two separate telephone systems, and one of them is for your calls, and the other one is the system that we have the guest on. Well, the one that is for your calls burned out. And the replacement parts have been ordered, but they are not here yet. So we're down to operating on the single line, which is the one that the guest is on. In order for me to take your calls, I've got to do something to make it happen. And what we have to do is we have to let that guess go. But I'm really interested now in what you think about this theory. I get emails through the week, and I get a lot of email every day. And I appreciate it. I read it all. Sometimes I don't answer it because we just run out of time, but I always answer as many as I can. And what I'm interested in is, what do you think about that theory, the theory that this weather warfare is being directed from the International Space Station and from the shuttle? I've told you I don't buy it, and I have told you why. But I want you to have the opportunity to say what you think. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. Ohio.
Okay, Terry, you are breaking up something fierce. Yeah, we're not going to be able to understand, Terry. You're going to have to call us back. For some reason, we've got a really bad connection. So give us a call back, and we'll try to get you on here. The question is, maybe for some people, they say, well, why would you even bring something like that up? Well, because some of you bring it up whenever you send me email. And so I want to know, if that's what you think, why do you think that is? Why do you buy that theory? All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
It's Terry from Ohio. Am I any better?
You're much better.
Oh, okay. I know we can't ask the guests, but I heard right before we went into Iraq this last time, they had the worst sandstorm.
Yeah, he mentioned that, actually.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
And, it was said that China or Russia was paid some money to slow us down for a while.
It worked. It slowed us down.
Yeah. I just think that, any of this stuff that they're playing with, just like when they first blew up nuclear bomb, that, they didn't know if that fission would ever stop. With HAARP and CERN and all this stuff, I don't think, they're playing with fire, and the benefit for mankind, if any, is way down the road, and it's going to be mostly used or can be harmful before it's any good on any of this stuff, I feel. I heard that Major Danes on another a radio show here in June, and they was talking about that hole in the ionosphere or the covering over Alaska or wherever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that they remote viewed it, and the scientists are only paying attention to that one spot, but he says all over the world it actually looks like Swiss cheese and it's getting worse, but they don't really know that. So I think we're playing with stuff, and we're going to end up shooting ourselves in the foot.
Well, the hole you're talking about would be in the ozone layer. And if the ozone layer completely dissipates so that we don't have it, can human life still exist? Yes, it can. Will it be comfortable? No, not at all. And we'll have to wear special suits to get outside, suits that will protect us from ultraviolet radiation. We'll have to wear special headgear like the astronauts do, with a visor that protects our eyes from ultraviolet radiation. Yes, we can still exist, but that's about what it'll be, just existing. It won't be life as we know it.
Yeah. And that's why I say, when they talk about, keep stuff secret for national security. But, who knows, if Dr. Strangelove is in control of our national security and what should be secret. I think there should be another body that's accountable to us that would oversee what they're doing you know, and say, hey, maybe we shouldn't do this or not, you know.
Yeah.
Instead of
what do you think about that theory that several people have written to me about, the theory that says they think that the weather control is happening from the International Space Station? Can you hang on through the break to answer that?
Sure.
Yep. All right. Hang on. I want you to answer what you think about that. We'll be back, folks, right after this break. More of your calls. And welcome back to the show. During the break, I was informed that, in fact, I've been saying the wrong number, telephone number. The correct number should be appearing on your screen. It is 623-237-3814, and I was informed I've been saying 287. Well, it's correct on your screen, okay? What is on your screen is correct. 623-237-3814. Terry, are you still with me?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I had asked you just before break, what do you think about that theory?
I'm surprised that you're getting a lot of email on that. It don't make much sense to me. The key word there is International Space Station. So
yeah.
Who are they using this against? The Russians are mostly there, but we ferry up and down from it, you know. So I think that their technology is ground-based.
Well, and you know, do you buy what I say about I think that it would be detected by people, even amateurs that are watching the space station, that are monitoring radio frequencies and so forth. I think it would be detectable.
Yeah. There was something going on up there. You know, I'm sure some scientist or somebody somewhere, you know, would, you know, get wind of it, you know, and at least pass it down anonymously through the internet or something.
Yeah.
But like I said, I don't believe that.
All right, man. I appreciate the call. Thanks.
Sure. Bye.
All right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, the telephone line is open, and it is 623-237-3814. It's, you know, anything is possible. Anything is possible. But how likely is it is another issue. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Yeah, Bob.
I had a question for Jerry.
Okay, well, you know, Jerry is gone, but he may have addressed it. Go ahead with your question, and I'll do the best I can with it if he's already addressed it.
Oh, you would know more than I do. Do you think that some of those weather-changing things that that humans are doing, or we're doing, or the government is doing, do you think that some of those techniques can be used to filter our air for, like, some kind of purposes to get rid of all the smog?
Well, I don't know. Perhaps it can. Oh, we lost our caller there. I don't know. Perhaps it could be. I think certainly there is electronic technology that can be used in that way. To clean up the air. But it may be cost prohibitive to do that. I don't know. You know, there are air filters that you can buy for your home that are really not filters. They are electronic, and they attract the pollution, which collects on some electrically charged plates. And so is it possible? Well, I think the technology is there, and I think it's possible. How likely is it that they could use it? I think they would use it. I think every large city would be using it if it was feasible cost-wise. And so I'm of the opinion that it must be not feasible cost-wise to do that. But there may be some advanced technology that could be used for that. Now, I'm a little bit surprised at the fact that, you know, I get email all the time. It's not like from hundreds of people, but I get it on a regular basis that talks about this theory that our space program is being used, the International Space Station and the shuttle, to do weather modification. I'm a little surprised that I'm not getting any calls from folks like that. But the telephone line is open, and we will certainly be glad to take your call. I have a flash message here from Australia that says the HAARP patent is listed under a weapon which is listed as a missile shield, and the subsection mentions nuke. So basically, it is a missile shield for destroying nukes as they re-enter the atmosphere. Okay, that's from Australia, from Andrew. I was not aware of that, Andrew. Thanks for that. Thanks for that flash message. And here's one from Norway that says, "I don't believe that weather warfare is being run from the International Space Station." Either. And let's see, this one is from the United Kingdom, and it says, "I find no convincing argument that large-scale weather-altering capabilities exist. If so, and as I asked," okay, this is from Mr. Crowley, who sent one previously. He said, "If so, and as I asked, why is it not used in war areas to destabilize the enemy country? Sorry, but I was not convinced by Smith's argument that the USA, with the most advanced military equipment in the world, is somehow behind or not as advanced as other countries in weather manipulation. And these countries, with the technology, want to target Texas and the American South. Perhaps bin Laden using his laptop in a cave somewhere. Sorry, but it's too weak of an argument." Okay, and this goes on. But let me say this. I think I'm not saying that Jerry Smith's argument that the United States may be behind other countries in this weather warfare stuff, I'm not saying that that statement by Jerry is correct. However, keep in mind that the United States of America, when the space race began, was already a superpower and had the most advanced military on the planet, but was behind in the space race, rather significantly behind the Russians. And, I mean, it was the Russians that put the first satellite in orbit. It was the Russians that put the first man in space. And so we had to play catch-up with the Russians in the space race. And but for a few minor, seemingly minor decisions that were made by the Soviet Union, they would have been the first on the moon. And but they made some sort of detour decisions, and they did not put the first men on the moon. But up until then, I mean, they had the first space station. Remember that. We put a space station up. We called it Skylab. There was one mission flown to that space station. It had serious problems, the space station. Only one mission was flown to it, and it was abandoned and eventually fell from the heavens. And the Russians were successfully running space stations for years before the International Space Station. So the idea that we might be behind, I'm not saying we are, but the idea that we might be certainly is plausible, because we've seen examples already in the space race. We've seen examples of someone else's technology being more advanced at various points. So it could be. But I think the idea that's floating around out there, and it is all over the internet, believe me, you'll see it if you get on the internet and start looking for it. The idea that somehow we are running space war or weather wars from the space station, I don't see it. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a joy to be with you this evening. Hopefully, our new parts will arrive before the next show, but maybe not. But we hope so. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want. And believe me, you don't want to miss tomorrow night's show. You need to be here for this one. Until then, so long, everybody.